It's a football. It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with a microphone in your hands.
Hello and welcome to Soccer Sense, the Sensible Football Podcast. This is Tariq joining you along with Vishal.
Hey guys.
And we are recording after a really, really long time. It was not a planned hiatus, but it so happened that this has been a pretty tough season on all of us, and we do not mean in terms of performance. because we all have
seen, unless you're a UA fan.
The UA fan is not on this podcast, thankfully.
Yeah, nothing makes sense there.
But it's been otherwise a tough season, Vishal, mainly because you and I, and Karan as well, we have been struggling to sort of bring ourselves up to the point to care about football games in between everything that has been going on.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, like, I think the consumption hasn't reduced, but just the will to be as involved has reduced quite a bit.
And definitely not ruminating on the games as much as we typically do, because naturally there are bigger things to worry about at this point.
far bigger things.
And everybody we know has been dealing with a very hard time. I'm sure listeners of the podcast would be going through experiences which are not different than ours and might be even more intense than ours. So all thoughts and empathy with you. What finally brought us to actually do an episode was the fact that it was just about a week ago that we saw Leicester City become champions of the FA Cup, or rather win the FA Cup for the first time in their history. And in a season which has been defined by not great football stories, from the impact of the pandemic to the tussle between owners and fans. I mean, we all know what happened to the Manchester United-Liverpool game, which got postponed. Resultantly, Manchester United's schedule was absolutely thrown haywire because of fan protests. We saw fan protests against all the English clubs who were part of the Super League. Incidentally, one club which wasn't was Leicester City, who managed to win the FA Cup. And we felt that if there was finally some amount of joy that we felt, even though Leicester is not a team which neither you nor I follow as our team, Vishal.
Absolutely. I think it's the win that the game needed, right? Because suddenly these 10 to 11 clubs came together thinking they were bigger than the game that gave them all of the standing that they have now.
I like how you mentioned 10 to 11 clubs. Clearly, we are not counting Spurs even on this calculation.
No. They shouldn't be counted, like, sheesh. They're not even, like, Leicester have been above them for quite some time now. So, let's not even go there. And like I said, they thought they're above the game. They're better than the game. And they thought they can take over and, you know, run the game in the way they wanted for financial gain. But they forgot who pays for the game, right? Because this is a fan-driven game. The TV rights, you make the money out of them because the fans are watching it, or the fans are the ones paying the gate passes that's helping you make the money. So to take that away, and I could not believe that they thought that the Champions League was purely about money and not about the fact that you're competing against the best and the best, whatever shape and form, right? Like, it is a meritorious system, and it doesn't matter which country you come from. You finish in the top 2 to 3 positions of your league, you make it to the Champions League, and then everybody's given a equal chance to play and win. And that's what football is built on. That's the principle. That's what the coal miners and all of them started playing football for, to get away from the madness, right? And to think these capitalists who are so disconnected from the game, who are possibly, most of them are putting the Spanish teams aside, are American, who possibly deal in sports, who are no relegation, who I think every year the same teams keep coming back, try to put that same system in place for football. I think the whole thing was just one large disconnect of between owners and club and fans. And more importantly, it was also a gaping, it was a massive exposure of how little they know about the game and how little they know about the history of this game.
And of course, we at Soccer Sense are huge believers in the people power in the game. We have talked about it in seasons earlier as well. And despite the influx of the riches, despite the influx of money, we've always loved ourselves a good underdog story. But more importantly, I guess it's a question of, like you said, looking at the game and asking yourselves that, do you consider yourself above the game or not? And that's the mistake, perhaps, these dozen clubs made. Contrasting that, Vishal, to what transpired in the FA Cup final in the weekend, they were Leicester City were taking on Chelsea, who had a good run under Thomas Tuchel. They have been very tight defensively. They may not have been absolutely explosive offensively, but often they were getting the job done. That's how the cup final was set up. Leicester clear underdogs, which is a position they clearly enjoy, because that's what happened in 2015 as well. But you look at that game, and we will obviously talk a little bit about the game. But I guess what made a bigger statement was the scenes we saw after the game ended, and Leicester had ended up with the trophy. But since this is Soccer Sense, Vishal, we have to take our Soccer Sense meter and train it onto the game itself, and in particular on Brendan Rodgers, who finally has a trophy to his name.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, we refuse to count the Scottish Premier League, because let's be honest, he took all and Rangers didn't stand a chance. So,
so I mean, and this is. This is Brendan Rodgers' comfort zone, in the sense that he kind of likes to punch above his weight as well. So quickly break down for us the cup final itself, and how Leicester managed to pull this off.
I think Chelsea should have seen the warning signs come, right? Like because even the previous week then, when they played Arsenal, they again had all the possession. Arsenal scored the early goal from a Chelsea mistake, and but after that, Chelsea really didn't create clear-cut chances, right? Yeah, and I'm sick and tired of people saying, yes, we dominated possession. Well, cheers to you, but the point of the game is to score a goal, not to keep 90% of the ball. You can keep it for 100%. If you don't score a goal, there is no point of this, right? And constantly people are coming back and saying, yes, we dominated the game. No, you did not dominate the game if you did not score a goal, right? It does not matter. And the warning signs were very clear. And it actually goes back to the Madrid game as well, right? Both legs of the Madrid game, I think, highly wasteful. They should have beaten Madrid at Madrid in itself. They shouldn't have let it go to the second leg, but they let it come to the second leg. And in the second leg, it took them a fair amount of time to kill off this game, right? So I'm surprised that nobody really observed that there were warning signs of Chelsea being either inefficient or not creating enough, right? However, still favourites. If you were to compare player to player, Leicester shouldn't have stood a chance, and Chelsea should have ideally, you know, won this game comfortably. But Leicester were clear; they were going to do the hit and run, and it was very clear from the word go that they were going to do a hit and run. And but that's the beauty of the cup as well, right? Like everybody was prepared for Vardy to, you know, sneak in a goal, and then Tielemans, who is terribly, terribly underrated as a footballer, pops up with that excellent, excellent goal. And that's the kind of goal that wins cups for you, right? Like it almost takes you back to Madrid and Zidane's volley. Not the same kind of goal, but again, it's that moment, right? It's that moment that wins you the cup. And after that, you knew Leicester were going to battle it out. And Chelsea really didn't have too many other ways to tackle this, right? Like they did not really have a plan B, which I was a little surprised from Tuchel, because he generally has a couple of plans up his sleeve, but he really was not able to implement too much. And I think in the end of the day, Leicester deserved a man, because 90 minutes of playing to the plan, because that was Leicester's plan. You need to understand that that was not them trying to salvage a situation. That was the plan that they came to play this game with, and that was the plan that was executed. The goal obviously was outstanding, and Chelsea did not have a counter to this, because man for man, Leicester managed to match them across the field, and irrespective of the amount of money Chelsea paid and got the players, you couldn't really get this done. So, well deserved.
And I mean, the team Tuchel put out as well was kind of did not really have the kind of pace or movement that would neutralize the tendency of Leicester to break away, to hit on the counter, which they perfected under Ranieri during that Premier League winning season.
Absolutely right. I think the early mind game was one right there, right? Because ideally you would have Reece James play on the as a wing back, and either Aspilicueta does not play or player plays, right? But yeah, Aspilicueta started as a wing back, and Reece James played as almost part of the back three, right? Which was them trying to make sure that they don't let go of Vardy, right? Or give Vardy the space, or have somebody who can keep up with Vardy. But what that really did is open up that additional space for somebody in central midfield, right? Because you are so focused on Vardy, and that's really what lost you the game. Because if it was a typical Chelsea formation, it would be very difficult for Tielemans to have that much space and that much time in midfield to really pick a spot almost, right? And so while I think that's really where the game changed, because while Tuchel thought he was really tackling the Vardy problem, he kind of forgot the fact that there are other world-class players playing for Leicester. And Leicester, again, though I criticized the move when the game started, was the fact that they also played Ayoze Perez, right? Ayoze Perez, not the most robust of talents, but quick, really can on his day can be really frustrating and really good for the opponents. For the opponents, and here he played a more defensive role, and Maddison sacrificed his starting position for that. Right? So I think Brendan made a couple of very smart moves and paid off well. Paid off really well.
And it paid off well enough for the trophy, which they celebrated with really unbounded joy. I mean, there were fans in the stadium, and them being able to celebrate with the fans. There was a lot of elements to this, Vishal, that really moved us, because it's been quite a while since we have seen football as normal, and by extension, the world as normal. It's possible that looking at this, the feeling was that this is what it's supposed to be like, that celebrating with the fans, unbounded joy.
Absolutely.
And not to mention an owner who has taken on a big responsibility and almost has a childlike fascination and attraction to the game. I mean, there are very genuine scenes of him hugging the cup after the end. I mean, it was almost like a childhood dream realized for him. And incidentally, I think Brendan Rodgers made a point about them, because he talked about how much the owners get football and the community, because these guys have been involved in the in Leicester, not just the club, but the community as a whole throughout their ownership, which is why they are so revered and loved in the Midlands. Essentially, I think what Brendan Rodgers was trying to say was that while they may be extremely successful business people, and I quote specifically what Rodgers said, he said, but they understand that it's about people and they care for people. And when people do their work, they do it well, they want to look after them, and always with real respect. So I think that sentiment came out quite a bit from the on-pitch celebrations post the game.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think it clearly differentiated that the two kinds of owners in football, right? One who do it for the sheer profit of it, and one who do it for the sheer, while profit is obviously the underlying fact, there's the love for the game as well, right? Let's think of the most successful clubs in recent history, be it Arsenal, be it United, be it Chelsea. When have you really seen their owner be so involved in the success of the club, right? Their purpose for their reason for success, or their motivation for success, is commercial success, right? If they did not win trophies, is equal to they did not win sponsors. If they did not win sponsors, is equal to they did not get the global reach and the money that they put into the club, right? And that's really the difference between the Leicesters of the world versus your top Uniteds of the world, right? Because the motivations are different. It meant something to him, right? Like to be down there with the players, and he could have clearly acted like an owner almost, right? But that was not it. He was out there, he was celebrating. They knew what it meant for the club. They knew it was his father's dream, and he was fulfilling that dream. So it was just a feel good, at that little bit of faith that needs to be restored in football. Because honestly, after what United and the Glazer family pulled off, I've almost lost a little bit of touch with them, right? Like I'm not as involved as I these people do, have a little more firmer and a little more stronger in what the punishments they doled out. But that's that but it's great to see that there is a part of football that still does it for the love of the game and not necessarily just for the commercial gain in the game.
And that makes us hopeful for the upcoming season, because this this little groundswell of fan support and vocal fan opposition to what looks like blatant rent-seeking and commercialization of the game. This has been some amount of pushback, although obviously it's a more complicated issue than we can talk about in a couple of minutes in a podcast. But that definitely shapes up an interesting next season. But Vishal, let's stay on this season and let's talk about a couple of things that we haven't really addressed, because the last time we podded on the league, on the Premier League, Manchester City were not really the favorites to win the league. They did it with four games to spare. Incredible revival from Pep Guardiola after that start. An outstanding season from the defensive side of Manchester City, which is a new dimension that we saw. Ruben Dias absolutely deservedly getting the Writers Association Player of the Year award. Take us through this quickly, Vishal. In short, from a soccer sense angle or a point of view, the secret of Manchester City's transformation and potential historic double incoming if they play out to form in the Champions League.
I think it's simple, right? It's down to the manager, because this is a manager who at the base level has accepted that he made a mistake last season, accepted it, and the fact that he didn't have enough depth. And if you really look at it, he did not go out this transfer season and make 4-5 big signings, but made 3-4 signings, right? 3-4 signings to give them depth in each position. Now he has forced, like last year, he did not have a centre-back who was fit at one point in time. And Fernandinho was playing centre-back, right? At this point in time, he has 4 world-class centre-backs in his team. And they would walk into any team at any given point. He has 4 world-class centre-backs, 2 world-class wing-backs, 2 world-class left-backs, and every position has 2 world-class players. That's that. It's as simple as that, where most teams, including Liverpool, thought, okay, we've got what it takes to continue the season. It was really Pep who really figured out the fact that last year was a tough year. Our players are not going to get time to recover and injuries are going to hit you. And he was very, very well prepared. And you have to tip your hat to Guardiola, because there are very few managers who are constantly learning, constantly evolving, and accepting the fact that they need to change and grow with the game. And what a stellar season of management and football from Manchester. And you have handed to them.
Yes, I mean, finally, Pep Guardiola seems to be in his element. And I think no other stat reflects how Manchester City changed their style a little bit, other than the fact that whatever they have done under Pep Guardiola so far, I think this season they had the least amount of possession as compared to the other seasons. I think about 3 or 4 percentage points lower. So they were not as keen on holding on to the ball and passing it around.
No, absolutely. Man City were absolutely clearing the ball, right? Like, they weren't trying to always play the ball out. They weren't always trying to have that perfect set of possession football. They were actually, there's a lot he has learned and evolved. I'm telling you, I have immense respect for this man. There are managers who are getting left behind. There are managers who are trying to constantly try the same system and try and succeed within the same system. But there is one
manager who's... Klopp.
And Mourinho. Between these guys, you've got to always understand that the game is changing. People are observing, people are learning, and they're smart individuals. This is not the olden days of football. There's too much tech, too much footage out there to really rest back on the same type of football, same model. So you need to evolve. And to the manager who did, he's back on top. So everybody else is going to play catch up with him.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, again, we at Soccer Sense obviously have a bit of a soft spot for Pep Guardiola, because we've spoken about him many times, and we have been also critical of him. But broadly, like you said, we have seen his footballing genius in all kinds of ways. And I mean, look at the transformation in terms of putting a John Stones at the back and being able to get that kind of a season out of him. When not too long ago he was the butt of all jokes as far as the back line of Manchester City went. Quick preview by stealth on this, Vishal. Can Guardiola finally break the Champions League hoodoo come 29th May?
I genuinely, this is such a tough one, because I don't like both teams to win the Champions League, but Damn it.
this has been the toughest Champions League matchup from Soccer Sense's personal viewpoint. I think literally more or less since we started covering things on Soccer Sense, because the last time Chelsea reached the final was the 2012, which like I was discussing this week.
Yeah.
2 days ago was the anniversary of when we exchanged those messages, and effectively Soccer Sense was born out of that discussion.
Exactly.
We were not too hot on Chelsea winning the Champions League that night either. And now we're faced with this Hobson's choice where, I mean, clearly, as Manchester United and Liverpool fans, we have no love lost for seeing Manchester City win a European title of all things.
Yes. But if I have to choose, I'd rather have City win this game than Chelsea. So, and I hope Pep pulls it off, because I don't know, I just don't want Chelsea to win. It's that biased, if you're wondering.
Although our Soccer Sense meter clearly says that, you know, Pep Guardiola is going in much more prepared, because they were much more clinical in their semi-final against PSG.
They played PSG out of the park. That was the three halves of the best football I have seen in ages. Like, I have not seen a team play that well for that long. Like, wow, I enjoyed that semi-finals.
So it could be Pep Guardiola switching on the super mode, and who knows how deadly he then becomes when the next season comes along, which we hope Vishal will be able to cover in more normal and more enjoyable times, because
amen.
If there is anything that has been the core driving philosophy of this podcast, it has been that we talk about football because it allows us to process the rest of the world better. That just has not been the case the last 6 months or so, which kind of also explains, if any of our listeners are wondering, why we have been this patchy. I mean, we have not been able to string together episodes. Our inconsistency, I think, has been worse than Liverpool at Anfield at one point. but I mean, Anfield this season, or especially 2021. But yeah, just like Liverpool, we hope we can end this on a high, and we look forward to a huge season incoming, and we hope the season has more Leicester-like moments and more pure joy of football to be celebrated than things off the field taking the limelight, like with the ugly saga we saw, beginning with Messi's transfer from last year, and
here we go again.
Ending with the Super League fiasco. But you can be rest assured that any of those things happen, we will be back to bring them to you and place the Soccer Sense lens on it. Meanwhile, that's all we have for this special episode of Soccer Sense. Effectively a season closer, because we really don't think we are coming back to discuss the Champions League final, are we?
No, we're not.
So you can catch us on any of the podcasting platforms that you use, and you can follow us on Twitter at Sense Soccer, and also find us on Audioboom. audioboom.com/channel/soccer-sense. Meanwhile, this is Tariq signing off along with Vishal.
Take care, guys. God bless you all.
And everybody, please take care and stay safe. We see you next season again.
Absolutely.
Football.